Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the Murder Tape Chronicles. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present The Cemetery Keeper, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The First Letter. It was a night like any other, or so I thought. The fog clung to the ground like a shroud, creeping through the gravestones and curling around the wrought iron fence that separated the cemetery from the rest of the town. The air was thick with the smell of damp earth and decaying leaves, a scent I had grown used to over the years. It was my life, after all, tending to the dead. I was alone in my cabin, a modest structure just large enough to house a cot, a small wood-burning stove, and a rickety desk piled high with old ledgers. The wind howled outside, rattling the windows and making the entire cabin groan like a restless spirit. I had just poured myself a drink, cheap whiskey that burned on the way down but numbed the gnawing emptiness inside, when I heard it. A faint rustling sound. I froze, the glass halfway to my lips. For a moment, I thought it was the wind playing tricks on me, but then it came again, soft, deliberate, like the whisper of a hand sliding something under the door. My heart thudded in my chest as I set the glass down and rose to my feet. I approached the door cautiously, the wooden floorboards creaking under my weight. The sound seemed to echo in the silence, each step louder than the last. When I reached the door, I hesitated, my hand hovering over the latch. My breath fogged in the cold air as I finally pulled the door open, half expecting to find someone standing there. But there was no one. The fog swirled in the moonlight, and the shadows of the gravestones stretched long and ominous. My eyes darted around the cemetery, searching for any sign of movement. Nothing. Just the stillness of the night and the eerie quiet that had become my constant companion. Then I saw it, a folded piece of paper lying just inside the doorway. I bent down and picked it up, my fingers brushing against the rough texture of the envelope. There was no name, no address, nothing but my own name scrawled across the front in jagged handwriting that sent a shiver down my spine. I stepped back inside, closing the door behind me, and held the envelope up to the light. For a moment, I considered not opening it. There was something about it that felt wrong, as if the very paper was imbued with malice. But curiosity won out, as it always does. With trembling hands, I tore it open and unfolded the note inside. The words were simple, yet they hit me like a punch to the gut. By dawn tomorrow, the butcher's son will die in a fire. It cannot be stopped. I read the words again, my mind struggling to process them. A prank, I thought. It had to be. Some sick joke from one of the local kids who thought it would be funny to scare the cemetery keeper. But as I stared at the note, the pit in my stomach grew deeper. There was something about the handwriting, about the way the words were phrased, that felt too deliberate. Too real. I crumpled the note in my fist and tossed it into the fire. The flames devoured it greedily, the paper curling and blackening until it was nothing more than ash. Out of sight, out of mind, I muttered to myself, trying to shake off the unease that clung to me like the fog outside. But the unease didn't leave me. I spent the rest of the night pacing the cabin, the words from the note echoing in my head. When the first light of dawn broke over the horizon, I stepped outside, hoping the fresh air would clear my mind. That's when I heard the shouting. The sound came from the direction of the town, carried on the wind like the wail of a banshee. I followed it, my heart pounding as I made my way down the hill and into the streets. Smoke filled the air, thick and acrid, stinging my eyes and filling my lungs. The butcher's shop was ablaze. Flames licked at the wooden beams, consuming the building in a fiery inferno. A crowd had gathered, their faces pale and ghostly in the flickering light. I pushed my way through them, my chest tightening as I saw the butcher himself on his knees, sobbing uncontrollably. "Peter's still inside," he cried, his voice raw with desperation. "My boy's still in there." I wanted to move, to do something, but my legs felt like they were rooted to the ground. The heat from the flames was unbearable, and the smell of burning wood and flesh made me gag. I watched, helpless, as the fire consumed everything. When it was over, the firefighters pulled Peter's body from the rubble. He was unrecognizable, his once vibrant face reduced to a charred, lifeless husk. The sight of him made my stomach churn, and I turned away, fighting the urge to vomit. The note had been right. I staggered back to the cemetery, my mind racing. How could this have happened? Was it just a coincidence? Or was the person who had written the note somehow responsible for the fire? I locked myself in the cabin and poured another drink, my hands shaking so badly that I spilled half of it. As the whiskey burned its way down my throat, I tried to convince myself that it was just a sick coincidence, that the letter meant nothing. But deep down I knew better. Something had been set in motion, and I had a terrible feeling that this was only the beginning. Chapter 2: The Letters Multiply. The second letter arrived 2 nights after the butcher's shop burned to the ground. I had barely recovered from the shock of Peter's death, though the whiskey I drowned myself in helped dull the edges. That night, the fog was heavier, the kind that makes you feel like you're walking through a dream or a nightmare. The air was colder too, biting at my skin as I made my way back to the cabin after digging a fresh grave. I was halfway up the hill when I saw it. A shadow moved near my front door, quick and fleeting, like a ghost slipping through the darkness. My heart skipped a beat. I froze, straining my ears to catch the faintest sound, but all I heard was the distant howl of a stray dog and the rustling of leaves in the wind. I should have turned around. Something deep in my gut screamed at me to leave, to go back to the town and spend the night at the inn. But I didn't. Instead, I forced my legs to move, one foot in front of the other, until I reached the cabin. The letter was waiting for me. It was tucked under the door, just like the first one. The envelope looked the same, plain, unmarked, and ominous in its simplicity. My hands trembled as I picked it up, the memory of the last letter fresh in my mind. I stepped inside, bolting the door behind me, and lit the lamp on the desk. The handwriting was the same, jagged, almost frantic, as if the words had been scrawled in a fit of desperation. I unfolded the note, my eyes scanning the words. "The schoolteacher, Miss Clare, will be found in the woods with her throat slit. It cannot be stopped." I read the words over and over, hoping they would somehow change, that they would transform into something innocuous. But they didn't. They stayed the same, taunting me with their grim certainty. The first letter had been right. Peter had died, just as it had predicted. And now here was another letter, another prediction. I slumped into the chair, the note still clutched in my hand. I thought about taking it to the sheriff, but what would I say? That I had received a letter predicting a murder? That the handwriting was unfamiliar, and that I had no idea who could have written it? They'd think I was mad, or worse, that I was involved. The hours crept by as I sat there, the note staring back at me from the desk. I couldn't bring myself to burn it like I had the first one. This felt different. The first letter had been shocking, but this one was personal. I knew Miss Clare. She was kind, soft-spoken, the sort of person who didn't deserve to be caught up in whatever madness this was. By the time dawn broke, I was a wreck. My head throbbed from lack of sleep, and my hands shook as I poured myself a cup of coffee. I told myself I was being ridiculous, that there was no way the letter could be true. But when the first screams echoed through the town, I knew. I found myself running, my feet pounding against the cobblestone streets as I followed the sound of chaos. A small crowd had gathered at the edge of the woods, their faces pale and filled with horror. I pushed my way through, my breath catching in my throat when I saw her. Miss Clare lay sprawled on the forest floor, her eyes wide and unseeing. Her neck was a jagged mess of torn flesh, blood pooling beneath her in a macabre halo. Her hands were curled into fists, her nails caked with dirt, as if she had fought desperately to escape her fate. I stumbled back, my stomach churning. The world around me seemed to tilt and spin, the sounds of the crowd fading into a dull roar. Someone grabbed my arm, their grip firm and insistent. "Thomas, are you all right?" I turned to see Father Benedict, his face a mask of concern. I nodded numbly, though I felt far from all right. My mind was racing, a thousand questions swirling in my head. How could this have happened? Who was behind the letters? And why did they seem to know about these deaths before they happened? The rest of the day passed in a blur. The sheriff questioned everyone in the town, but no one had seen or heard anything unusual. Miss Clare's death was ruled a murder, but there were no suspects, no leads. That night, I sat in the cabin, the silence pressing down on me like a weight. I couldn't shake the image of Miss Clare's lifeless body, her wide eyes staring at nothing. The letter sat on the desk, its words etched into my mind. I was still staring at it when there was a knock at the door. My heart leapt into my throat. Who would come here at this hour? I opened the door to find Emily Hawthorne, the town's journalist. She was an unusual woman, sharp-witted and unafraid to ask the questions no one else dared to. Her brown eyes scanned my face, taking in my haggard appearance. "Thomas," she said, her voice steady. "I need to talk to you." I stepped aside, letting her in. She glanced around the cabin, her gaze lingering on the letter on the desk. "You've been receiving them, haven't you?" she asked, her tone leaving no room for denial. I swallowed hard, the weight of the truth pressing down on me. "How do you know?" She reached into her bag and pulled out a crumpled piece of paper. It was another letter, identical to the ones I had received. She handed it to me, her expression grim. "This one was left at my office," she said. "It mentions you." My hands trembled as I unfolded the paper. The words sent a chill down my spine. The cemetery keeper knows more than he's saying. Beware. My mind raced. Someone was targeting me, trying to draw me into their twisted game. But why? What did they want from me? Emily watched me closely, her gaze unwavering. "We need to figure out who's behind this, Thomas. Before more people die." Her words were a lifeline, pulling me out of the fog of fear and confusion. I nodded, a spark of determination flaring to life. Whoever was behind these letters, whoever was orchestrating this nightmare, they weren't going to stop. And if I didn't do something, the next death might be my own. Chapter 3, Blood in the Shadows. The third letter arrived less than 24 hours after Miss Clare's murder. The ink was still damp when I unfolded it, as though the words had been scrawled in a frenzy just moments before it was delivered. My pulse quickened as my eyes scanned the message. "The blacksmith will be found hanging in his workshop by midnight. The time for mercy has passed." The words hit me like a blow to the chest. Midnight? That was only hours away. This wasn't just a prediction, it was a countdown. My first instinct was to run straight to the blacksmith, to warn him, to do something, anything to stop what was coming. But a sliver of doubt rooted me to the spot. What if this was a trap? What if the person behind these letters was waiting for me, ready to turn suspicion onto me? Emily's voice broke through my spiraling thoughts. She had stayed after our conversation the night before, unwilling to leave me alone in the wake of the second murder. She leaned over my shoulder now, reading the letter, her face tightening with each word. "We can't wait," she said, grabbing her coat. "If we sit here, he'll be dead by morning." Her determination was a jolt to my system. I shoved the letter into my pocket, grabbed my lantern, and followed her out into the cold night. The fog was so thick it felt like walking through a dream, or a nightmare. The streets of the town were eerily quiet, the usual sounds of laughter and conversation replaced by an oppressive silence. The blacksmith's workshop sat at the far edge of town, a hulking structure of brick and iron that seemed to loom out of the fog like a fortress. The forge's glow was visible through the windows, the faint clang of metal against metal breaking the stillness. When we entered, the blacksmith Harold looked up from his work, his broad face glistening with sweat. He was a towering man, his arms as thick as tree trunks, and his presence filled the room. "Thomas," he said, his voice a low rumble. "Emily, what brings you here at this hour?" I hesitated, unsure how to explain. Emily, as always, was more direct. "Harold, you're in danger," she said, her tone urgent. "We've received a letter. Someone is targeting you." His brows knitted together in confusion. "A letter? What the hell are you talking about?" Before I could respond, a sound cut through the air, a faint creak, like a door swinging open. We all turned toward the back of the workshop, where the shadows seemed to ripple and shift. "Who's there?" Harold called out, his voice echoing off the walls. No answer. The three of us exchanged a glance, the tension in the room thick enough to choke on. Harold grabbed a hammer from his workbench and motioned for us to stay behind him as he approached the shadows. My heart pounded in my chest, each beat louder than the last. And then it happened. The figure emerged from the darkness like a ghost, swift and silent. A flash of silver caught the lantern light, a blade. Harold swung the hammer, but the attacker was faster. The knife plunged into his side with a sickening sound, the force of the blow driving him to his knees. "Run!" Harold gasped, blood bubbling from his lips. Emily screamed, and I grabbed her arm, dragging her toward the door. But the attacker was on us in an instant, his face obscured by a black hood. He moved with an almost inhuman speed, his knife slicing through the air. I shoved Emily behind me, raising the lantern as a makeshift weapon. The attacker hesitated, his dark eyes locking onto mine. For a moment, we were frozen, the tension crackling between us like a live wire. Then he lunged. The next few seconds were a blur of chaos and violence. The lantern shattered against his shoulder, the flames licking at his cloak as he stumbled back. Harold, still clutching his bleeding side, managed to grab the attacker's ankle and yank him to the ground. "Go!" Harold roared, his voice raw with pain. Emily and I didn't need to be told twice. We bolted out of the workshop, the cold night air hitting us like a slap. Behind us, the sounds of a brutal struggle echoed through the fog, grunts, the clang of metal, the wet, visceral sound of flesh meeting steel. When the noise stopped, the silence was deafening. I turned back toward the workshop, my stomach churning with dread. The glow of the forge flickered through the windows, casting eerie shadows across the walls. "Thomas, don't," Emily whispered, her voice trembling. But I couldn't leave Harold behind. I stepped cautiously back into the workshop, my breath hitching as I took in the scene. The attacker was gone, the back door swinging on its hinges. Harold lay sprawled on the ground, his massive frame eerily still. Blood pooled around him, seeping into the cracks in the floor. His eyes stared blankly at the ceiling, his face frozen in a final expression of defiance. I dropped to my knees beside him, my hands trembling as I reached for a pulse. Nothing. He was gone. Emily appeared in the doorway, her face pale. "We need to get out of here," she said, her voice barely above a whisper. She was right. The attacker could still be nearby, watching, waiting. But as I stood, my eyes caught something glinting on the workbench. It was another letter, identical to the ones I had received. I snatched it up, my heart sinking as I read the words. "You're too late again, Thomas. The next death will be closer to home." The words felt like a punch to the gut. Closer to home? What did that mean? Who was next? As we stumbled out into the night, the weight of the letter pressed down on me. The killer was playing a game, and I was the pawn. Harold's blood was on my hands, and I couldn't shake the feeling that the worst was yet to come. The fog swallowed us as we made our way back to the cemetery. The night seemed darker now, the shadows deeper, and every sound set my nerves on edge. I couldn't stop thinking about the letter, about the warning it carried. The killer was getting bolder, and the bodies were piling up. But one thing was clear. Whoever was behind this wasn't going to stop until the entire town was drenched in blood. Chapter 4, The Priest's Sins. The morning after Harold's murder, I felt like the world had grown colder. The fog was thicker, the cemetery quieter, as if the earth itself mourned the blood that had been spilled. I couldn't shake the feeling that I was being watched, that the very shadows in my cabin held eyes and ears. Sleep had been impossible. The image of Harold's lifeless body burned into my mind. When the knock came at the door, I jumped so hard I nearly tipped my chair over. My heart raced as I approached the door, half expecting to see the hooded figure from the workshop standing there, knife in hand. It wasn't. It was Father Benedict, the town's priest, his weathered face etched with concern. He stepped inside without waiting for an invitation, his piercing blue eyes scanning the cabin. "Thomas," he began, his voice heavy with worry. "We need to talk." I motioned for him to sit, though he didn't. Instead, he paced the small room, his hands clasped tightly together. "You've been receiving these letters," he said, more a statement than a question. I nodded, the weight of the truth pressing down on me. "How do you know?" "Emily came to me," he admitted. "She thought I could help, that perhaps the church could intervene." I barked a humorless laugh. "Intervene? You think a few prayers are going to stop this madness?" His expression darkened, and for a moment, I thought he might lash out. Instead, he sighed and sat down heavily in the chair across from me. "These aren't just the acts of a madman," he said. "This is evil, Thomas. Pure, unfiltered evil." I didn't respond. What was there to say? He wasn't wrong. He leaned forward, his voice dropping to a conspiratorial whisper. "The letters, they aren't random, are they? They're targeting specific people." I hesitated, the words caught in my throat. Finally, I said, "Yes. And whoever's sending them knows things, things they shouldn't." His jaw tightened, and I saw something flicker in his eyes. "Fear? Guilt? I couldn't tell. What is it?" I pressed. "You're hiding something." For a moment, he didn't answer. Then he said, "I received one, too." The room seemed to tilt, the air growing heavier. "What?" He reached into his coat and pulled out a folded piece of paper, handing it to me with trembling hands. I unfolded it, my eyes scanning the familiar jagged handwriting. "Confess your sins, or the whole town will know your shame." "What sins?" I demanded, the words slipping out before I could stop them. His face paled, and he looked away, unable to meet my gaze. "It's not important. Not important," I snapped. "Father, people are dying. If you know something, anything, that could help, you need to tell me." He hesitated, his hands trembling as he ran them through his thinning hair. "Finally," he said, "years ago, before I came to this town, there was An indiscretion? What kind of indiscretion? A woman, he admitted, his voice barely above a whisper. She was married. We had an affair. Her husband found out, and there was an altercation. He didn't survive. The confession hung in the air like a noose. You killed him? I asked, my voice hollow. It was an accident, he insisted, his eyes wide with desperation. He attacked me, and I defended myself. But no one believed me. The church helped cover it up, sent me here to start over. I stared at him, my mind racing. And now someone knows. He nodded, his face ashen. Whoever is sending these letters, they know everything. About me, about the others. It's as if they can see into our very souls. The room fell silent, the weight of his confession pressing down on us like a tombstone. I didn't know what to say, what to think. But one thing was clear. Father Benedict was right. This wasn't just random violence. This was a reckoning. That night, I couldn't sit still. Every shadow seemed to move. Every creak of the floorboards set my nerves on edge. Emily had gone back to her office, promising to dig deeper into the letters, but I wasn't sure if she'd find anything. Whoever was behind this was meticulous, careful, and terrifyingly thorough. I decided to visit the church. If there were answers to be found, perhaps they were there. The fog was so thick I could barely see a few feet in front of me as I made my way through the empty streets. The church loomed out of the mist like a great, hulking beast, its steeple piercing the night sky. The door creaked open under my hand, the sound echoing through the cavernous space. Candles flickered along the walls, their light casting long, dancing shadows. The air smelled of incense and old wood, a scent that had always made me uneasy. Father Benedict? I called out, my voice barely louder than a whisper. No answer. I stepped further inside, my footsteps muffled by the thick carpet. The silence was oppressive, the kind that made you feel like you weren't really alone. That's when I saw it. A figure slumped over the altar, motionless. My heart leapt into my throat as I approached, my legs feeling like lead. It was Father Benedict. His robes were soaked with blood, the crimson pooling around him in a grotesque halo. His throat had been slit, the wound jagged and deep. His eyes stared blankly at the ceiling, a look of terror frozen on his face. On the altar beside him was another letter, the ink smeared with blood. Your silence is no longer enough. Confessions must be paid in blood. I stumbled back, the room spinning around me. The killer had struck again, and this time, they had done it in the house of God. The sound of footsteps echoed behind me, and I spun around, my heart hammering. But there was no one there. Just the empty pews and the flickering candles. I ran. Out into the fog, my breath coming in ragged gasps as I stumbled back toward the cemetery. The shadows seemed to follow me, the night alive with unseen eyes. When I finally reached the safety of my cabin, I locked the door and collapsed onto the floor, my body trembling. Father Benedict's blood-streaked face was burned into my mind, his final moments a grim reminder that no one was safe. The killer wasn't just targeting the town. They were targeting its secrets, its sins. And I had a sinking feeling that my own secrets were next. Chapter 5, The Hunt Begins. The death of Father Benedict left the town shaken. News of his murder spread quickly, whispers of sacrilege and damnation weaving through the streets like a poison. People gathered in hushed clusters, their eyes darting nervously to the shadows. The killer wasn't just spilling blood, they were unearthing the town's darkest secrets, exposing them for all to see. I couldn't sleep after finding the priest's body. Every time I closed my eyes, I saw the altar, the blood, the letter smeared with his life's essence. The words haunted me. Confessions must be paid in blood. What did the killer want from me? Why was I at the center of this gruesome game? Emily was relentless in her investigation. She had begun piecing together the connections between the victims. Peter, Miss Claire, Harold, and now Father Benedict. Each of them had a secret, a sin they'd buried deep. But the letters had unearthed those sins, and the killer had turned them into death sentences. Thomas, Emily said one evening, her voice cutting through the oppressive silence of my cabin. We need to stop waiting for the next letter. We need to figure out who's behind this before more people die. Her determination was admirable, but I could see the fear in her eyes. She wasn't just worried about the town, she was worried about me. How? I asked, my voice heavy with exhaustion. The killer is always one step ahead. They know things, things no one else should know. Emily leaned forward, her brown eyes fierce. Maybe they're not working alone. Maybe someone in this town is feeding them information. The idea made my stomach churn. Was it possible? Was someone I knew, someone I'd spoken to, conspiring with a killer? We start with the letters, she said. we need to figure out where they're coming from. That night, we decided to stake out the cemetery. Emily was convinced the killer would strike again, and I couldn't argue with her logic. The cemetery was the heart of the town's secrets, the final resting place of its sins. If the killer wanted to send a message, there was no better stage. The fog was thick, swallowing the gravestones in a sea of gray. We positioned ourselves near the edge of the cemetery, hidden among the trees. Emily had brought a small lantern, its flickering light casting long, dancing shadows. Hours passed in tense silence. The only sounds were the rustling of leaves and the distant hoot of an owl. My nerves were frayed, every creak and crack sending a jolt through my body. Then we saw it. A figure moved through the fog, their outline barely discernible. They were dressed in black, their movements quick and deliberate. My breath caught in my throat as they approached one of the graves, their hands moving swiftly. "They're leaving something," Emily whispered, her voice barely audible. I nodded, my heart pounding. I wanted to rush forward, to confront the figure, but fear rooted me to the spot. What if they were armed? What if this was a trap? The figure straightened and began to move away, disappearing into the fog. I waited until they were out of sight before stepping forward, my legs shaky. The grave they had visited was freshly dug, the dirt still loose. At the foot of the headstone was an envelope, identical to the ones I had received. Emily grabbed it before I could, her hands trembling as she opened it. The note inside was brief, but its message was chilling. "The next death will be yours, Thomas. Midnight. Prepare yourself." The words hit me like a hammer. Midnight. That was less than an hour away. Emily's face paled as she read the note, her hands shaking. "We need to get out of here," she said, her voice urgent. "You're not staying here. If this is a trap, we can't play into it. But where could I go?" The killer had proven they could strike anywhere, at any time. Running felt pointless. "I'm not leaving," I said, my voice steady despite the fear gnawing at my insides. "This ends tonight." Emily stared at me, her eyes wide with disbelief. "Thomas, this isn't some noble sacrifice. If you stay, you'll die." "Maybe," I said. "But I'm not going to let them keep playing this game. If they want me, they'll have to come and get me." Midnight came too quickly. I sat in my cabin, every muscle in my body tense. Emily had refused to leave, her presence both a comfort and a source of anxiety. If the killer came for me, would she be caught in the crossfire? The clock on the wall ticked loudly, each second dragging me closer to the moment of truth. The lantern on the desk cast long shadows across the room, the flickering light making the walls seem alive. And then I heard it, a faint rustling outside, the sound of footsteps on gravel. My breath hitched, my heart hammering in my chest. I motioned for Emily to stay quiet, grabbing the heavy iron poker from the fireplace. The door creaked open, slow and deliberate. The figure stepped inside, their face obscured by a black hood. In one hand they held a knife, its blade gleaming in the dim light. "Thomas," they said, their voice low and distorted. "It's time." I didn't wait for them to make the first move. I lunged forward, swinging the poker with all my strength. The figure dodged, the knife slashing through the air inches from my face. The cabin erupted into chaos. Emily screamed, grabbing a chair and hurling it at the intruder. The figure stumbled, giving me just enough time to strike again. The poker connected with their arm, the knife clattering to the floor. But they were fast, too fast. They tackled me, the force of the impact knocking the wind out of me. We crashed to the floor, their hands wrapping around my throat. For a moment, I thought it was over. But then Emily appeared, a shard of broken glass in her hand. She drove it into the figure's shoulder, the scream that followed sending a chill down my spine. The figure staggered back, clutching their wound. Blood dripped onto the floor, the crimson pooling around their feet. "You won't stop me," they hissed, their voice filled with venom. They turned and bolted out the door, disappearing into the fog. I collapsed onto the floor, gasping for breath. Emily knelt beside me, her face pale and streaked with tears. "They'll be back," I said, my voice barely a whisper. Emily nodded, her jaw set. "Then we'll be ready." The killer had escaped, but they had made one crucial mistake. They had bled. And blood leaves a trail. Chapter 6, The Reckoning. The hours after the attack in my cabin stretched on like an eternity. The adrenaline that had kept me going ebbed away, leaving a gnawing sense of dread. The killer had escaped, but Emily's strike with the shard of glass had left a wound. It wasn't much, but it was the first break in the storm of chaos surrounding us. As dawn broke, the fog hung heavier than ever, casting the cemetery in a grim, ethereal light. The gravestones stood like silent witnesses, their moss-covered faces hiding centuries of secrets. I couldn't shake the feeling that the entire cemetery was watching me, waiting for what came next. Emily paced the cabin, her hand clutching the bloodied shard of glass like a talisman. "We have their blood," she muttered, her voice low but charged with urgency. "That means they're injured, maybe vulnerable. If we act fast..." "They'll act faster," I interrupted. "They're always one step ahead. Always watching." "Then we stop playing defense." Her eyes locked onto mine, fierce and unwavering. "We draw them out." Her words sparked something inside me, a reckless determination, fueled by anger and exhaustion. I was done waiting for the killer to make the next move. It was time to end this. We started by retracing every step the killer had taken, piecing together the timeline of the murders. Emily's knack for detail was invaluable. Each victim had been targeted for a reason, their secrets laid bare before their deaths. Peter, the butcher's boy, had been selling stolen goods out of the shop. Miss Claire had been involved in an illicit affair with a married man. Harold, the blacksmith, had forged weapons for criminals. Father Benedict's sins spoke for themselves. And me. I was the cemetery keeper, the silent observer who had buried their secrets in the earth. But why now? Why this spree of violence and retribution? Emily's investigation led us to an old storage shed at the edge of the cemetery, a place rarely visited except by me. The door hung slightly ajar, the rusty hinges creaking in the wind. Inside, the air was thick with the smell of mildew and decay. "What is this?" Emily whispered, her flashlight cutting through the gloom. The answer came in the form of a makeshift shrine. Photographs of the victims were tacked to the walls, each marked with a red X. Beneath the photos were notes, letters, and newspaper clippings, evidence of their sins meticulously gathered and displayed like trophies. And at the center of it all was a photo of me, the words "Gravekeeper of Secrets" scrawled across it in blood-red ink. "They're obsessed with you," Emily said, her voice trembling. I stared at the photo, my stomach churning. This wasn't just a vendetta, it was a ritual. The discovery of the shrine lit a fire under both of us. The killer had made their obsession clear, and we knew it was only a matter of time before they struck again. The blood trail from the cabin gave us our first solid lead. It led away from the cemetery, winding through the woods toward the outskirts of town. We followed it cautiously, the weight of the fog pressing down on us like a physical force. Every snap of a twig, every rustle of leaves, set my nerves on edge. The forest felt alive, as though it had absorbed the killer's malice and now sought to drive us away. After what felt like hours, we came upon an abandoned house, its windows shattered and its roof sagging. The blood trail ended at the door. "This is it," Emily said, her voice barely audible. I nodded, gripping the iron poker tightly in my hand. My heart thundered in my chest, the taste of fear bitter on my tongue. We moved inside, the floorboards groaning under our weight. The interior was dark, the air thick with the stench of rot and neglect. Cobwebs hung like veils from the ceiling, and every shadow seemed to writhe with malevolence. "Be careful," Emily whispered, her voice trembling. The house was eerily quiet, each step we took amplified in the oppressive silence. We searched room by room, our breath fogging in the cold air. And then we found them. The killer sat in a chair in the basement, their hood pulled back to reveal a face that sent a jolt of shock through me. It was me. Or at least, it looked like me, a reflection distorted by rage and madness. Their features were gaunt, their eyes sunken and wild. Blood stained their clothes, seeping from the wound Emily had inflicted. "Thomas," they said, their voice low and chillingly familiar. "You finally made it." I froze, my mind struggling to process what I was seeing. Emily stepped forward, her flashlight trembling in her hand. "What the hell is this?" she demanded. The killer smiled, a grotesque parody of my own expression. "I'm the part of Thomas Grieve he tries to bury. The sins he pretends don't exist. I'm the truth he hides from himself." Their words hit me like a hammer, the weight of their meaning crushing me. I staggered back, the poker slipping from my grasp. "No," I whispered. This isn't real." "It's as real as the blood on your hands," they said, their smile widening. "You've buried so many secrets, Thomas. Did you really think they'd stay buried forever?" The confrontation spiraled into chaos. The killer lunged at me, their movements swift and animalistic. Emily screamed, swinging her flashlight like a weapon. The beam of light struck the killer's face, momentarily blinding them. "Run!" Emily shouted, grabbing my arm and dragging me toward the stairs. But I couldn't run. Not this time. I broke free of her grasp, turning to face the killer. They charged at me, their knife gleaming in the dim light. I ducked, grabbing the poker from the floor and swinging it with all my strength. The impact sent them sprawling, the knife skittering across the floor. I didn't stop. I couldn't stop. Blow after blow, I drove the poker into their body, the sound of breaking bone and tearing flesh filling the air. The killer screamed, their voice raw and inhuman, but I didn't let up. Rage consumed me, a fire that burned away my fear and hesitation. When it was over, the killer lay motionless, their blood pooling around them like a dark halo. Emily stood frozen at the foot of the stairs, her face pale. "Thomas," she whispered, her voice trembling. What have you done?" I dropped the poker, my hands slick with blood. My breath came in ragged gasps as I stared at the lifeless body on the floor. "I ended it," I said, my voice hollow. But as I looked closer, the killer's face began to shift, their features dissolving like smoke. When the transformation was complete, I saw my own face staring back at me. The realization hit me like a freight train. The killer had been me all along. The days that followed were a blur. The town buried its dead, the secrets of the victims laid to rest alongside them. Emily left, unable to look at me without seeing the monster I had become. I returned to the cemetery, my life reduced to the silence of the graves. The letters stopped, but their words lingered in my mind, a constant reminder of the darkness that had consumed me. In the end, the only person left to bury was myself. And so I dug a grave, deep, dark, and final.